This is a Pinball News production.
Thanks everyone for the interest in coming out. This is the second time we're showing the color DMD publicly. We have it over in the exhibit hall. Hopefully after the talk you guys will have a chance to go out and actually see it. This is a project I've been working on for a little over the last 2 years. When you go to the next slide. Also with me is Chris Enright. Chris has been helping me out a lot, and towards the end I'm going to show you some of the work that Chris has been doing to help support the project. So here's the agenda I'm going to cover. I'll try to keep it to a half an hour so you guys can get to the exhibit hall. We're going to do a video demo just to help explain what we're trying to achieve. I'll go through the project background. I'll talk a little bit about existing DMD displays and where the color DMD fits within the pinball architecture, and then give you guys some info on future direction. So I'm going to start with a video. This is a video that I created at the beginning of the year when I had what we're calling the color DMD functional. It was integrated into a pinball machine and I could set it up and demonstrate it. And I was trying to get some feedback. So I set up a website and I created the video and sent it out to a few people in the industry to try to get some idea of whether there'd be interest in this. And I think this helps explain what the color DMD is. Okay, so that's the video. I think it's a pretty simple idea. Thank you. Thanks. So the main thing is just trying to find a solution for the orange dots, trying to make it seem a little bit more integrated with all the rich color and bright lights that a pinball machine should be. It started about 2 years ago, summer of 09, where I was looking for a short-term, easy project to work on and was inspired by some of the other things that I had seen people doing in the hobby, especially things with electronics, because I'm an engineer and that's in my sweet spot. So one of the things that had always bothered me since I got into the hobby is why the display was still orange and why nobody had done anything about it. And then the more I got into this, the more I understood why and how difficult it really is. So I won't go through the whole timeline. There's some bullets there, but the main thing is, started summer of 09. By the end of 09, I had some basic functionality working. I'll show you guys some of this in some of the later slides. And then by the end of 2010, I had something that seemed passable as a display that may have belonged inside a pinball machine. And that's when I created the video and set up the website and tried to hide it away where prying eyes wouldn't find it. And it stayed hidden for about 6 months, and then somebody leaked the video in June, and it hit the news groups and the forum. So why don't you go to the next slide. All right, so let's talk a little bit about dot matrix displays and how they work. Dot matrix displays are fairly low resolution. There's only 128 columns and 32 rows. They're high voltage gas plasma displays. And something that I didn't know when I started the project is that the dots are actually either on or they're off. There's not different brightness levels the way many people have come to think about it. Scanning is performed row by row, very similar to a TV set. So what will happen is the bits will shift in for whether you want the dot lit or not within a given frame. The row will be energized, so the whole row lights up at once. Then it turns off, and then it moves to the next row and keeps cycling through. And so if you want to vary the brightness of a dot on the display, you have to do it by changing how long the dot is turned on for. And that's called duty cycle modulation. There's a couple ways to do it. Stern does it within a row. As the row is being energized, they may leave some dots on longer than others. You can also do it on a frame-by-frame basis, which is how Bally and Williams did it. And I think it's a little bit easier to explain. So if you think about how the dots that you see on the screen are set up. For most games, especially the earlier games, there's four levels. And you can decompose those four level images into two bits, right? Four levels is two bits. And you can separate it into a high page and a low page. So to help explain this, it may be hard to see. I don't know if we can dim the lights a little bit. But For example, the score in this display is the brightest intensity, and you'll notice that it's on in both what I'm calling the high page frame and the low page frame. The words England and ball one are a little bit lower in intensity, and you can see they only show up in the high page frame. And then some of the dots that are at the lowest intensity, for example, the frame in the lower right corner, that only shows up in the low page frame. And so this should make more sense when we go to the next slide. So if you open the back box of a WPC game, this is what you'll see. To try to simplify it a little bit more, you have your processor board in the lower left corner and your video board up in the upper right corner. And the data flow is basically from the processor on the left up through those wide ribbon cables over to the video RAM and then out through the narrow ribbon cable down to the bottom of the slide there where it would go out to the conventional DMD display. So when the processor generates its frames, it's basically creating these high page and low page frames, and they're getting written to the video RAM. And the whole job of the video board is really just to keep refreshing the display with these high page frames and low page frames. And the way it'll do it is it will create a sequence where the high page frame will stay on the screen twice as long or be refreshed twice as often as the low page frame. And so you get these sequences that look like high page, low page, high page, high page, low page going out to the display. And then your eyes perceive that as a four-level image. So one of the things that you could see with this is if you want to start introducing color into the game, there's nothing on the video RAM or video board that deals with the graphics. It's really just cycling through the frames. So everything is over on the processor board. And if you want to add color to the processor board, you have to create a system where the processor can deal with three times the amount of information that you need when you're dealing with just a single color. So you'd have to have red, green, and blue instead of just the orange. And that would mean having three times the amount of graphics RAM. It would mean having increased CPU power so that the CPU could handle that extra data while still doing all the other functions that it's supposed to do. And then the video board would also have to change in order to be able to deal with the multicolors. So adding color into an existing game really requires coming up with a whole new board set, which I think is part of the reason why you haven't seen color into new games for a long time. And it seems like with Jack introducing color now and Stern is working on another board set, we might actually see a change. But what I was interested in is just looking at the existing games and wondering what would this have looked like if it was done in color. There was no way I was going to go in and build my own pinball machine or even CPU board. But what I could do is try to retrofit color on top of an existing game. And so looking at the architecture, there's really two places if you want to try to add color. You can go in, you can change the ROMs, and then, you know, that's a pretty daunting task because you have to make sure you don't break anything else in the process. And then you're still dealing with the limited hardware architecture. Or you can try to catch the data somewhere in the system. And so you can either catch it on the way to the video RAM or on the way out of the video RAM where it's going out to the DMD display. And this latter method is what we're using for the color DMD. So once I figured out where I was going to insert the color DMD, I wanted to see whether it was worthwhile. And so I started out, before I built anything in hardware, just doing some Windows programming and trying to add color to some of the existing DMD frames and see what it would look like. And this gives you an idea of how the frame painting goes. We bring the captured frames from a game into the PC and then add regions of color on top of the existing dots. So to clear up a conception that or misconception that was out on the news group about just remapping the four intensities to four different colors, that's not really what happens. What happens is we take the existing dots as they're supposed to appear with the correct intensities, and we're trying to lay color on top almost as if you were shining light through a colored filter. And so if you want the alien on the left to look green, you can just slap down a big blob of green somewhere in that region and let the light from the dots shine through, and it would show up as green on the display. Same thing for the red on the bricks and or the white on the dress. And so if you look carefully, you'll see that all the detail is really preserved. We tried to keep what the artist's original intent was, and just enhance it rather than replace it with something else. So this was the engine. Once I figured out how we were going to add color, I had to come up with an idea on how this would work real time. And so I won't go into a lot of details on what the engine does under the hood, but from a high level, it takes in the DMD signal, the normal signal that would go to your current display, and then there's a stage of processing where it tries to figure out what frames are going to the display, and then the next stage would process that data and try to enhance it. So you could do a lot of things in the frame processor. You could actually replace all the data if you wanted to. You could put a different picture there. You could put a high-resolution picture there. Right now, the way the engine's constructed is just to overlay color on top of the existing dots. And then, finally, it would go out to a video interface, which has a similar function to the current video board, which is to keep refreshing the display, and it knows how to send signals appropriately to whatever type of display you want to hook up to. So by the end of 2009, I had started working on hardware. And you can see a picture of the board there. It's a Xilinx FPGA starter kit board that you can get online. I think it's $200 or $300 for the board. And I was able to map all the algorithms onto the board and have the back box sending the signal out through the DMD cable to the board, which is, you can't see it, but it's off to the right there. And then this board happens to have a VGA interface, so I was able to take the VGA signal from the board back onto just an off-the-shelf computer monitor. This is a monitor I got at Walmart that was about the right size. And I was able to prop it up in front of the back box and see for the first time real color video being generated by the game. So I could stand in front of the game and flip the ramps. And all this did at this point was really just play through some of the canned animation. There was still a lot more work to go. So on the next slide, you can see where that monitor has been decased, and I've taken that same Xilinx board and really just adhesived it onto the back of the LCD panel, and then was able to mount that panel inside the speaker panel in a way that it looked like it was part of the game. There's a small daughter card there that I needed to interface the ribbon cable to, but something I want to point out here is that the VGA stuff is gone, and the only thing that's powering this board or driving this board now are the same two cables that you have going to your traditional display. So you can see the multicolored power cable off to the right of that board, and then your standard 14-pin ribbon cable coming in with the data. So if you go one step further, go back one slide for a second. Thanks. So you can see there's a metal case right behind that panel. And inside that is some of the power stuff that the panel needs to operate. This was a high-voltage compact fluorescent panel. And so now if we go forward one slide, you can see where I've tried to slim the profile down to where it could actually be mounted in there safely without risk of banging up against the driver board. And so on the left side is the controller board that's running off the FPGA. And on the right-hand side now you can see the power supply board, which is a high-voltage switching power supply and a compact fluorescent inverter, which, if you're not familiar, the fluorescent inverters run normally around 600 volts, and when they're first trying to kick the lamp on, they kick up to 1,200 volts. So this is still, clearly a prototype. It's not something that I felt comfortable letting people get hold of and running the risk of electrocuting themselves. But what you can see is the DMD power cable is still coming in the center, and then the video cable is coming down around here, and there was a bunch of hacks to get the wiring in to the board so that all this would fit. So that's the stage that the display was at the end of last year when I made the video. And so I was trying to figure out what to do next, whether I should keep pursuing it. I knew how much work was still ahead. There were a bunch of challenges if this was really going to go anywhere. The form factor wasn't easily reproduced. It needed a special mounting bracket. The monitor panel was pretty heavy. That panel came out of a 15-inch TV, and so it's encased in steel. And even though we got it to mount on the speaker panel, there was some concern about the weight of that weighing down on the plastic panel brackets and maybe breaking the standoffs. And those panels are also difficult to source because they're not widely used. I mentioned it's a high voltage backlight. The switching transformer is designed for line voltage, so it's turning 120 volt AC into 180 volt DC. So it's a little bit hairy, and then the controller board was pretty expensive. So after getting some feedback on the video, there seemed to be a lot of interest. I decided to try to pursue it a little bit further, and I figured even if it didn't go anywhere, it'd be a good experience just learning how to put all this stuff together. So I worked on generating a small custom circuit board to replace the controller board, and that heavy panel was replaced with a lightweight, high-def notebook panel. The low voltage, at this time, the panels were changing. They were moving away from the compact fluorescents to LED backlights, and that was a real advantage for this project because it meant the backlight could be powered off the 12-volt supply. And so now we have a system where the whole thing, the controller board and the display, is just running off the unregulated 12 volts. And Chris was nice enough to come in and design a lightweight custom metal bracket so that we could mount it into the back of the game and make it something that's easy to reproduce. And then all the while that we're working on the hardware, still making improvements to the engine and the painting algorithms and things to make it a little bit easier to color different games. So this is a production, what I'm calling the production prototype that we got back late August and we're demoing in September. You can see that the speaker panel is pretty thin. The whole profile of the panel is very thin now. The custom controller board is there. And again, you just see the two wires on the side there. You've got the standard ribbon cable comes in and then just the 12-volt power coming from the back box. And then in the lower portion there, you could see the actual display. It's a standard notebook display, so I've had a bunch of questions about the height. The height is similar to the height of the current WPC95 speaker panel. And so we're only using the center portion of the display. That part shines through the glass, and the rest of it is just not illuminated. Okay, so future direction, where we go from here. There's been some questions about some of the IP issues. One of the first people that I contacted was Rick Bartlett at Planetary Pinball, and he's been talking with Williams and trying to work to clear any IP concerns. So at this point, we think we're okay. Chris Enright has come on full-time. He's actually working on a second game, which I'll talk a little bit about in a second. And then where we are now is, so that prototype system just had the display board running. I don't know, Chris, if you want to go back one slide. So you can see there's an unpopulated corner of that board where we're adding a USB interface, and so that's so that you can upgrade the RAMs if we come out with RAM updates and also make it more portable if we want to move it from one game to another. So we're respinning the board now to add those features. After the new board's back and tested, we plan to start ordering parts and try to open a pre-order to find out, who's interested. The plans are to do an initial rollout. We're targeting later this year, maybe early next year, but the plan right now is to build 100 of these. We set an introductory price for these 100 at $399, and we'll handle sales just through the website. There'll be a pre-order there. You can order it from us. Down the road, if we move to distribution, Bay Area would help out with the U.S. and web sales, and then possibly look at two additional distributors for overseas markets. Okay, so I've gotten a lot of questions, some this morning, about are we working on other games and what's the next game. So now you guys know. Don't tell anyone. So where this is now is we have most of the game colorized. We extended the engine a little bit to do some added features, and we'll be working those into the hardware. As soon as this board goes out, I'll get back on the software so we can upgrade the engine and hopefully get this running on the game pretty soon. Okay, last slide. So there's a demo here at Expo. I'd like to thank Larry Scott and Phoebe for bringing Larry's AFM game up and allowing us to invade it with the display. It's set up, I think, in the back corner of the hall. If you look around, you won't miss it. It's brightly lit, and there's a color DMD topper on top of it. It'll be here through at least Saturday afternoon, at which point Chris and I have to head back to Southern California. But if you want more information, and I'll try to take some questions here, but I'll be walking around. You know, feel free to come up and ask me anything that wasn't addressed here. Please visit our website if you're interested. Sign up for the mailing list. That's where I've been making announcements, and you know, I try to post something to RGP when there's anything important to say. And just thanks for all the interest, and appreciate you guys coming out. Thank you. So I guess we have a little time if you guys aren't too hungry. So.
Now, you guys, when you go through this, you have to go with everything in color, frame by frame, from the beginning, right?
Right.
What happens if a frame pops up in there that you have to like code for, let's say like an Easter egg or some secret designer code that it pops?
So the way the engine's set up, if there's a frame it doesn't recognize, it'll fall back to a default color. So it'll still present all the data, it just might not be fully colored. You know, there's also cases where there may be frames that we missed, right, in between lots of other things that are colored. And so there's ways to mask that and have it look as seamless as possible. Right. If you put it in another game, what it would do is if it can't recognize the frames, it's going to fall back to a default color. And so it's not in the code yet, but what we plan to do is make it so that you can program whatever default color you want. So if you wanted to move it from AFM to another game that's not supported, you know, you could do that and have a blue Tron or whatever you want.
A follow-up to that?
Sure.
So in some games, there's like a divided display or the score, some message is imposed on top.
Right.
So do you have a plan in mind for addressing that?
You're talking about like this, the latest Stern games?
Yes.
You know, honestly, the focus right now has been on the WPC side. I've looked at the Stern games. I actually own a Tron LE, so dividing the screen is easy. The only issue that comes up is when you have the light cycles moving from one side of the display through the other, and it actually crosses over, right? You wouldn't want orange on the right and blue on the left, and then the light cycle color changes. So it's doable. You know, it's just a question of how much more work we really need to put into it to make it look like it belonged there.
How many frames are typically in?
Good question. I think that there's, on AFM, I think there were close to 2,000 frames, but they're not, that's including, you know, say two frames for every four color frame, because you have the high and the low. But they're not all unique, right? There's a lot of shared information between them. So you're not hand coloring every single frame. You can leverage a lot of the color data from one frame to another and, you know, maybe shift it over a little bit if the frame's moving in a certain direction. So I think the estimate that we have right now for how long it takes to colorize a game, like AFM or Medieval, it's on the order of about 100 hours. Yeah, so I think in order for this to scale, it would have to be a model where the community could participate. And so the challenge for us is to try to create the tools in a way that other people can use them without requiring a lot of support. I have to say, when I did AFM, I felt like it was still a lot of massaging to make it work, and you really had to understand the engine. And so when Chris came on, I was a little bit skeptical about how it would go. But he was able to manage it pretty well. So in fact, I should have mentioned that what you saw for that second game, that's all Chris's work. So I think it'll happen. It may take some time to get there to where the software is robust enough and easy enough to use, but I think that's a direction we want to move in.
Is there any sort of voice that you provide?
I think the way it's set up now, there's only maybe one or two frames of delay from when it's received to when it goes out through the system. So the frames are normally presented at 120 hertz. So it, you know, compared to what a normal refresh rate would be, so to get three frames out, it's really like a 40 hertz refresh cycle to get all three cycling through, so you get the four level perception. It's less than one of those frames. frame time. So no, there's really no perceivable difference. But you can see it yourself in the demo hall. There's no additional questions. Again, feel free to stop me in the exhibit hall. I'm happy to talk, and thanks again.